Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. We're back from a little time off. I hope you enjoyed some of our favorite Best of Out in the Bay rebroadcast the last 3 months. If you missed any, you can hear them on the archives page of our website, outinthebay.com. And we're jumping into spring with a brand new season. This week, we're looking back again, but also forward, as we celebrate the Bay Area Reporter, or just the BAR, San Francisco's weekly newspaper that's been covering queer news, events, and issues for 40 years this week, since long before queer was acceptable shorthand for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and then some. The late Harvey Milk was the BAR's first political columnist before being elected San Francisco's first openly gay supervisor. 4 decades for a weekly paper is quite a milestone in a time when many news outlets, especially traditional print and broadcast, are struggling, shrinking, cutting staff, even closing. As we celebrate the bar's 40th, we'll look at the current health of gay news media and highlights of Bay Area queer history, which the bar has chronicled. Here to enlighten us are the Bay Area's Reporter's publisher, Tom Horn, and longtime freelance photographer, Rick Gerharder, curator of a special BAR exhibit up just for the week through next Wednesday, April 13th, at the GLPT History Museum in San Francisco's Castro District. Bar lawyer-turned-publisher Tom Horn was the paper's general counsel for more than 15 years and was a close friend of BAR co-founder and former publisher Bob Ross, who died in 2003. He's been active in San Francisco's civic life for more than 30 years, having served on numerous boards and commissions, including the SF War Memorial and Performing Arts Center, and the SF Ballet Association. He also chairs the San Francisco Paris Sister City Committee and was named Honorary Consul of Monaco in San Francisco by Prince Albert II last year. Tom Horn, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you, Eric.
Rick Gerharder has been a freelance photojournalist and travel photographer for more than 2 decades. His work is seen regularly in the Bay Area Reporter, and it's been in a wide variety of periodicals, all the way from The Economist and Newsweek to the Leather Journal and back in the day, Whorezine. His photos have been featured in several books, including San Francisco's Castro, Out in America, Gay by the Bay, A History of Queer Culture in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Witness the Love, Stories from the Heart of the AIDS Epidemic. He's also been published extensively in the Lonely Planet Travel Guides and seen in galleries from here to Havana, Cuba, even. In setting up the bar exhibit at the GLBT History Museum, he poured through every issue of the paper from its first in April 1971. Rick Gerharder, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So let's start by... I want to get right into looking at some of the highlights, the significant events in Bay Area queer history that the BAR has covered. What leaps to mind?
Well, when the paper started in 1971, it was really in the height of the gay liberation movement that had come out of the Stonewall riots in New York, and even before that at Compton Cafeteria and California Hall here in San Francisco. So I think the tension that existed back then between the gay community and the police, for example, and the problems with City Hall were what the news coverage focused on in the early years.
Now, Tom, a lot of people, you know about think of the Stonewall riots in New York City in 1969 as being kind of the big event that is kind of looked at as modern gay history from that point forward. You mentioned the Compton riots. Tell us about that, because that's here in San Francisco, but a lot of people don't know much about it.
Well, that was a hangout for drag queens in the Tenderloin back in the 60s, and there was a similar situation with the police harassing the drag queens, and then they just got fed up and fought back. But it didn't get the kind of national attention that the Stonewall riots did. It was a local story, and it was really just one day. And likewise with the situation at California Hall, which was a gay charity event that the police had promised they'd leave alone, and they didn't. They harassed the crowd, and there was some violence and fighting back. But again, that was just a local story. Mm-hmm. It was really Stonewall that I think brought the gay liberation movement to the public's attention nationwide.
Rick, do you want to add anything to that as far as some top issues that have come up over the past 40 years that were significant in the BAR's coverage?
Certainly in the political realm, the different campaigns of Harvey Milk, and then when he was finally elected supervisor in 1977, and then, of course, the subsequent assassination of him and Mayor Moscone, He was writing a column through that whole time. At that time, the paper was biweekly, and he wrote every issue about different subjects. And in general, there's been a very strong political element to the paper that has reflected the different issues and the different situations in the gay community for the last 40 years. There's been consistent coverage of discrimination issues, legal cases, and areas like that. There's been consistent coverage of national topics, different marches and different political situation in the national arena. Don't Ask, Don't Tell, most recently. Of course, marriage has been one of the most recent subjects that's been covered very broadly and, you know, repeatedly over a period of years. And of course, probably most significantly is the whole AIDS epidemic, the AIDS crisis, and the arc of that. And the paper has covered it extensively in many, many different aspects. It was one thing as I went through the paper that I was very impressed about was that the period probably in the early 90s, that the page after page after page of AIDS-related news, medical coverage, there were some very, very good medical writers, coverage about different political situations related to it, drug prices, drug, just every aspect of it was covered in the paper extensively.
Nan, I do remember that one of the headlines that people remarked about was finally when there were no obituaries. What was the headline, and when was that?
After
years and years of funerals and I don't know how many the obituary pages became over. How many pages did the obituaries run at the height of the AIDS crisis?
It would consistently in that run 1.5 to 2 pages. Week after week, it would consistently be at least one page and as many as two. And there were a couple of times that I came across where it was a bit more than 2 pages, mm-hmm. which would probably involve about 40 to 50 obituaries if it was more than 2 pages, given the size. There was usually a photo with it mm-hmm. that went to it. The issue that you're referring to, no obits, was in the early 90s, I think. I don't remember exactly. And it was the first issue where there wasn't any obits. And the paper actually started publishing obituaries in one of the very first issues. It had an obit, and every now and then some significant prominent person in the community had died, there would be an obituary.
You know, the paper always saw its vision or its mission as reporting on things that were not being otherwise covered. And that was true in the early political coverage, and it became particularly true with the AIDS epidemic. Gay men became pariahs, and there was no information, and people wanted information, and when someone would become infected with HIV, they'd be treated like an outcast in a third world country, and it was Bob Ross's insight and vision that those people not be forgotten and be treated with respect and be allowed to die with dignity, and that's why he started publishing photos and life stories of people that had died, because he wanted to keep it in the public eye, and he didn't want those people to be forgotten.
Mm-hmm. One other thing related to AIDS that was very significant in the paper and that had quite an impact, and again, I forget the year, but it was at the peak, there were 4 pages. And it was the art director at the time, Richard Burt, took the photograph from every one of these obituaries and put it, just the photograph with their name, and it covered 4 pages. That was done in November of the year, and it was everyone that had died in that year.
This was done once, or this happened a couple of years ago?
I'm sorry?
This happened a few times, just one particular year.
There was a separate insert mm-hmm. of these 4 pages of just photographs of people who had died.
So, Tom, you were one of Bob Ross's closest friends. Why did he? You mentioned why he started publishing pictures and stories of people with AIDS. Why did he start the paper in the first place? What was behind? What was the need that he saw?
Well, if you go back to the political situation in 1971, when the paper started, and you'd had the 2 incidents in San Francisco and the Stonewall riots, and so there was a lot that was happening politically that wasn't being reported on. There wasn't a newspaper. There wasn't a means of communication. And Bob was active in a lot of different aspects of the gay community, from the imperial court to the very political part of the community and the cultural part of the community. And often they weren't in communication with each other. And I think he felt that it was important to have a voice for the community to let people know what was happening, where things were happening, and that it didn't, that information be shared.
What was he doing before he started the paper?
He was a chef.
Really? Okay.
He was a chef. He had he was from Brooklyn, and he'd been in the Navy. He'd served 3 years on a Navy submarine, and when he got out of the Navy, he settled in San Francisco, as so many did. And he was a chef by profession, and he ran a number of restaurants and supper clubs in San Francisco back in the 60s. If you remember the old PS and the Casa de Cristal on Polk Street, well, Bob ran those.
And that's when Polk Street was the heart of the gay community at that
Absolutely.
Time. Absolutely. Yeah. Rick, you were about
to say something. Yeah, I was just going to reiterate what Tom said in that. From the very first issue, there was arts coverage. There was a book review. And I think to reiterate what Tom said about bringing these two different parts of the community together, that it's very clear that was done consistently from the very, very beginning of the paper, that there was arts coverage, there was entertainment coverage, and then there was also the news coverage of not just political, primarily political at the very beginning, but even by the second year, the third year, there was a lot broader news coverage.
Mm-hmm. Bob loved opera, and he knew opera for someone who did not have much formal education. He had an incredible encyclopedic knowledge of opera. So right from the beginning, he wanted the arts and culture scene covered. And I think that's been one of the strong points of the BAR throughout history and up to today. And if you'll pardon me a brief anecdote, this year at the opening of the opera at AIDA, Donna Sachet, our society columnist, introduced me to Zandra Rhodes, who is a producer of AIDA. And Donna said, "This is the publisher of the Bay Area Reporter." And Zandra Rhodes' husband turned to me and said, "Your arts and entertainment critics and reviews are better than anything in the mainstream press in San Francisco." And I thought that was pretty nice. Sensational.
That's
and coming from someone who would know.
Sure, of course.
One other aspect related to arts that the paper has consistently covered is like the leather community, for example, and the drag community, that from the very beginning, that this has been a consistent aspect of the paper, that these more non-mainstream aspects of the gay community have been covered with extensively and with respect.
And the columnist,
it continues.
The columnists became household names. Mr. Marcus was the early leather community columnist and became so prominent in his own right. Sweet Lips, that covered the Polk Street scene and the social scene and the behind the scenes intrigues of what was going on.
And that was part of Bob Ross's vision, as you described earlier, of trying to have a sort of common meeting point for these sort of disparate parts of the community.
Well, I think so. And at the beginning, there weren't the resources to hire full time staff, but Bob had the talent to go out and find people who knew their individual fields, and then they could just write. They were like freelance writers, and they'd write a column, and it didn't require a full-time staff person. Then, as time went on, then we did have full-time staff people with journalism degrees and who would go out and do hard reporting.
And one other aspect is the paper has a real strong tradition of columnists throughout. Sweet Lips and Marcus were mentioned, but Michael Botkin wrote an HIV column that was very, very closely followed. The leather column,
Wayne Friday in politics.
Wayne Friday in politics, different columns with on theater. John Carr writes a porn review column that's followed and has been there for decades. So.
Hold on to that porn thought. We want to go back to something after I do a little ID break here. You told me before we went on the air about the sex ads. So remind me. You're listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Bay Area reporter, publisher Tom Horn, and freelance photographer Rick Gerharder. The BAR celebrates 40 years of publication this week. We're talking about the paper's history and the Bay Area history it's covered over the past four decades. Now, maybe that was a cheap shot there about the porn ads, but actually, you were, Tom Horn, you were legal counsel for the paper for over 15 years before you became publisher. And I'm curious to know what kinds of legal issues the paper faced. Did it have challenges because of sex ads and photographs that perhaps the rest of the community thought were inappropriate in 19.
Well, first of all, I don't know that I'd agree with Rick's characterization. I don't know that I'd call the we call them the back page ads, our models and our escorts. But no, surprisingly enough, the legal problems that would confront the paper had nothing to do with the back page ads. It was always over someone feeling that they had had something untrue said about them. It related more to libel and defamation laws than it did. When Con Murphy was chief of police, I had a conversation with him one time about...
About when was that? What years are we talking?
Well, it was when Dianne Feinstein was mayor, so it would have been...
late 70s, mid, early 80s?
Mid-80s.
Mid-80s, okay.
Probably 84, 85. And there had been quite a crackdown on prostitution in San Francisco, and I asked him one day, I knew him reasonably well, why he never went after The Guardian, I think was the one I picked. I certainly wasn't going to talk about the Bay Area Reporter because we weren't doing anything inappropriate. And he said, I would rather have people advertising in an adult publication and getting a phone call in private than have people out walking the streets where there's drugs and violence and assaults. And so there was a policy at the police department to leave that kind of thing alone, which was not a policy that would exist in other places in the country, certainly, but it did in San Francisco even back then.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the naming of the paper, the Bay Area Reporter. Most people just call it the Bar. Is that because, and Paul Bentley was the other co-founder, was it... anything to do with initials, Bentley and Ross?
No,
or absolutely. That's just
the corporation that owns the newspaper is called Benro, and that is a combination of Bentley and Ross. But that's the corporate name. The Bay Area Reporter, I think, was intended just to be a description of what the product was going to be, that it was going to report on gay news in the Bay Area, and there was a time that there was. A real emphasis on trying to cover stories specific to outlying areas. There was a South Bay section for a period of time. And, of course, there's an important gay community, particularly an important lesbian community in Alameda County. And so I think the actual name Bay Area Reporter was just to describe what the mission of the publication was.
And did it have anything at all to do with the fact that, bars were they were such a big part of the scene at that time, not just socially, but also politically, too. I mean, that was where people met each other. And I don't know, is that any part of it, or is that just coincidence that it spells bar?
Well, things can have more than one reason, and certainly that might have been a play. And there were a lot of bars at the time, and Bob had come from the food and beverage business.
Sure. Sure.
So it was perhaps a bit of a double meaning.
And that's certainly a place you can find the paper almost always.
And early on, the paper served as a resource to tell people where the bars were, mm-hmm. and the
well,
clubs.
Yeah, there were some of the very first issues, there were bar listings.
And, I mean, even still, there's a bar in Walnut Creek, the 1220, that, as far as I know, still doesn't have a sign. So we're talking 30, 40 years ago, it was not easy to find a gay bar or other places. I mean, San Francisco perhaps was easier than other places. But
and perhaps this is a good time for me to promote our new publication,
okay.
The Bar Tab, which is specifically intended to tell people what's going on around town at night. It's a nighttime guide. We've been publishing it now for the better part of a year. And it's distributed along with the paper right at the first of the month, and we carry a lot of bar ads in it, and also have listings on a daily basis as to what's going on in San Francisco, and encourage everybody to pick it up.
And it's not all entirely bars. It's other entertainment.
That's right. It's nightlife.
It also has a fair amount of editorial coverage and of different types of bars. There's a history page of some of the older bars and things like that. So,
speaking of history, Rick, I want to ask you to, as curator of this exhibit that's at the GLBT History Museum starting tomorrow and through next Wednesday, the 13th, you went, tell me the process you went through to curate that.
Well, there's two aspects to it. One, there's a small number of artifacts because we really don't have a lot of artifacts. And the people that have been involved with the paper, I don't think were real savers. And so there's very little of that. There's five different copies of the paper. Each time the format changed for the paper, there's an example of that. There's a few awards. There's a plaque from Mayor George Moscone from 1976 on the fifth anniversary. There's a few things from Mr. Marcus. But the main artifact of the paper is the paper itself. So I photographed several thousand different pages as I went through it, and myself and a couple of other people at the paper distilled that down to about 500 images that will run as a visual presentation on a loop that really shows what the paper has done and what it's covered and how it's changed in appearance and the issues that have become significant and the impact that the paper has played and the different advertisements. It's just a full range of things that I covered, the ads, the classifieds, just everything.
And how did those, I mean, you know, just kind of off the top of your head, what's your impression of how things changed? The classifieds could be one, and just the appearance of the paper from, you know, from day one, what did it look like?
Well, from day one, it was more like a time-size paper rather than a traditional tabloid, and it stayed that way for several years. It
and the
was
first few wishes,
pretty
I think
slipshod
you, yeah,
the first few years. There wasn't even page numbers.
Okay.
And things kept moving around, like the staff box would be there, and then it wouldn't be there, and different columns would never have the same place. But it was clear that it progressively got more professional, got more serious, got more... became looking more like a newspaper for a number of issues. Perhaps for 2 years, there was a big ad on the cover and then a headline, and then it became all news on the cover and just became more professional in that way.
And
color it's been introduced for a number of years, and now it's not 100% color, but most photographs are in color. It's also been online for... it's 5 years, I believe.
I think 2005.
Ebar.com.
Okay, right. Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely kept... I think it was one thing, impression I got from the very beginning, that Bob Ross and Paul Bentley had an idea that this was going to be a serious paper that would not just be kind of a throwaway, that it would cover the community in all its various aspects. It would be business-wise sound so that it could continue. For example, there was classified ads from the very beginning. And it has been reflected as the paper has adapted to some of the challenges and some of the changes in the technology and just the changes in the community.
So let's talk for a few minutes at least about the health of gay media generally. The BAR is taking and deserves credit as our nation's oldest continuously published newspaper serving the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities. It's important to note, though, that there are other gay papers nearly as old, perhaps a little bit older, depending on how you count things. The Blade in Washington, D.C., which covered national gay news, actually started a couple years early in 1969, but about 2 years ago had a brief break in publishing and is now back. And The Advocate started as a Los Angeles weekly and then became a national news weekly. I believe that was also in 1969. My point here is that I'm kind of curious about how the gay media overall has changed over these four decades and matured somewhat. The Advocate, I sort of think now, is being much less about hard news and more about entertainment. It's become a sort of a monthly glossy, but it for a long time was considered, you know, the nation's – that and The Blade, sort of the nation's top – sources for news about gay issues. Would you agree?
Well, I on your broader question about gay media, I think that it's changed a great deal, but I think it's very healthy. I mean, there are a lot of aspects of gay media today that certainly didn't exist 40 years ago. Your radio program, Eric, is one example, and there are now cable television programs that exist, and we have all the people online and bloggers and the websites and our website, and it's been difficult in the newspaper industry wide, not just the gay press, but industry wide, principally because of the decrease in subscription revenues and decrease in classified advertising.
Mm-hmm. As those move online, primarily,
because those
right?
have moved online, and that's not coming back.
And I've actually heard that in some ways, gay newspapers and other niche media, neighborhood papers, ethnic papers, are doing better than the huge dailies because they have a very dedicated audience who needs that information in a very specific way.
Well, we're different in two major regards. One, we're free. So we were never dependent on subscription revenue. And two, as you say, we are a niche product. And you find things in the Bay Area Reporter that you're not going to be able to find otherwise. So those are two reasons that we have survived. But I'm optimistic. I mean, if you look around the country, there have been papers that have gone out of business, but it really isn't because of what's happened in the newspaper industry generally. It's been for other reasons. If you look at papers that are well-managed and relevant and interesting in San Francisco or in Philadelphia or in Dallas, you'll see that they're thriving and they're healthy. And I expect that there's always going to be a demographic. You know, I can't imagine getting up in the morning and having my coffee without actually having a newspaper in my hand. But we recognize that not everybody gets their news that way. And so we've adapted and we've become relevant. And that's why we're active in social media. We have a Facebook page. We have Twitter pages. We have now launched our new publication that is specifically aimed at a different demographic. It's important to stay relevant. And that's what we're trying to do.
Okay. As the BAR celebrates 40 years, besides this retrospective exhibit at the GLBT History Museum, which is on 18th, just up from Castro, what other festivities do you have going on?
Well, there'll be a special section in the paper that comes out on Thursday. There'll be an exhibit that's planned for Union Bank downtown in June, which hasn't quite been determined exactly what we're going to do there, but it'll be something to highlight the 40 years of the paper.
And there's a celebratory party this Saturday at Toad Hall from, 5 to 6:30 or so?
Right, and everybody's invited to that.
Okay.
You can go and check out the exhibit across the street and then walk across for a drink.
Perfect time.
5 to 8. It goes till 8.
Oh, 5 to 8 o'clock on Saturday. And the museum is open from 1 to 5, Tuesday through Saturday. I want to thank Tom Horn and Rick Gerharder for sharing their time and their stories with us. If you'd like to know more about the BAR, you can pick up a copy in many parts of San Francisco and in gay-friendly bookstores, bars, coffee shops, and community centers throughout the Bay Area. And you can also find it online at ebar.com. That's ebar.com. For more on the paper's history, check out the BAR exhibit at the GLBT History Museum in the Castro. Again, that's on 18th Street between Castro and Collingwood through Wednesday, April 13th. And you can also get more information about that at glbthistory.org. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. Heard Thursdays at 7 p.m. Pacific time on KALW.org worldwide and at 91.7 FM in the Bay Area. And anytime you want on our website, outinthebay.com, where you can find 6 months' worth of archives, sign up for free weekly podcasts, and take us with you on your mobile device via Stitcher. That's right, Stitcher, the application that lets you download radio programs. It's all free. It's all on our website, outinthebay.com. We bring you conversations you aren't likely to hear elsewhere because we're able to have on guests that most mainstream programs can't or just don't. We hope that's of value to you and that you'll help keep Out on the Bay going strong for another 6.5 years. Please consider a tax-deductible donation at our website, outinthebay.com. We thank KLW for studio time. Thanks also to WY Enterprises for keeping outinthebay.com looking sharp and working well. Services for your life and your business, wyenterprises.com. And for computer help this week, my thanks to Ralph Doerr Consulting. Experience solutions in information, technology, and computers. RalphDoerrConsulting.com. That's Ralph, D-O-O-R-E, consulting.com. We'd love to hear from you, so please write to us, Marilyn at outinthebay.com and Eric at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening, and I am out of here.